Hello everyone and welcome to the latest in our live EG Property podcasts. Today in this session, over the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to be talking about if devolution leads, will investment follow? And joining me in the podcast studio today is James Child, Head of Retail and Logistics Research here at EG, Nick Markham, who is Chair of LCR Property, and Ian Thompson, who's Head of Communications and Investor Relations at Hayworth Group.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, indeed. Not quite Cannes, but Bishopsgate, which is a close second to the Croisette. Thanks very much for joining us today. I mean, it's an interesting day to be talking about devolution investment across the UK. We're going to hear probably at least 500 times today the words levelling up, I'm sure. We'll do a little counter through the budget later. But it's a big question to ask, isn't it? If devolution leads, will investment follow? And I guess I'd like to start our conversation looking at regeneration from a local level and what we as the real estate industry need to do and local authorities need to do to bring our towns back to life. Ian, I'm going to start with you. What do you think is the major catalyst that will enable that?
Well, historically, the UK is one of the most centralised states in Europe. So any kind of push towards devolution, so powers and money to the regions, got to be welcomed. I think there are two particular things where devolution can help reinvestment within places. And the first one is that financially, I think where devolution works best is where you've got a quantum of money that is between top government levels, so big infrastructure spending projects, and local authorities. So typically we talk about the sweet spot between £2 and £50 million for the real estate industry to bid into to get over viability hurdles, which tend to be larger in the regions anyway. And the other big point to get across is that regional mayors, and you've seen this with Andy Street, Andy Burnham, do it extremely well within the regions, is them acting as conveners on big infrastructure projects. They've done a fantastic job, Andy Street has, with Birmingham New Street. Andy Burnham's done it on a wider social issue, homelessness. And so I think that if you have, I believe there's going to be an announcement on Leeds today, if you have a further rollout of that mayoral model, then you have a greater opportunity to convene the public and private sectors on those big issues.
Fantastic, thank you. Nick, is that something you'd agree with, the importance of the mayor?
Yes, I mean, it needs someone with the leadership. They kind of look after a big enough area so they can kind of take a strategic view of the kind of benefits of the whole area, often involving the kind of like the suburban commuter areas rather than a kind of like a very small kind of like microscopic view, you know, as to how it might just, you know, kind of NIMBY affect people. And I think sometimes because the mayor's kind of, some of their powers aren't, you know, absolutely clear first time, especially the first time round mayors, they're looking to carve out roles for themselves. And so, you know, they see often these projects as their legacies, which, you know, is fantastic because, you know, my experience and LCR's having done, you know, kind of the likes of King's Cross and Stratford, is it really needs people who are going to bring energy and leadership and the ability to kind of pull lots of heads together, both at the local level, but again, this is the beauty of the mayors, the ability to walk into Number 10 or MHCLG and hold enough clout to kind of get their proper attention as well.
And do you think we've got enough talented people in the UK who could step up to that mayoral position and who understand the importance of the private sector, the importance of the real estate sector in bringing about that grand scale change?
I mean, again, to me, that's the beauty of the mayor model. I mean, I work quite closely with Andy Street. We were both non-exec directors at MHCLG. And, you know, the beauty, you know, generally to become a member of parliament, you've got to be in it, you know, kind of like man or woman and boy and girl from, you know, the age of, you know, straight from university, really, and that's your career path. And it's often very limiting, whereas the mayors, you know, it's often people have had careers, they've kind of become personalities in their own right in it, they've got the kind of the confidence, they've got the life skills. And I think people, you know, again, often people won't stand for their party because they see, you know, that they might be out of power for a number of years, and they think, why would I want to do that career wise? Again, as a mayor, you've got the ability to kind of create your own space. Mm-hmm. So I think that becomes much more appealing to, you know, people who might have had successful business careers, because they see that, you know, they've got the ability to make a difference.
Spot on. Completely agree with that. The key thing, though, is that successful people within the regions, of which there's a lot who want to get involved with this, will only do it if the powers and the responsibilities are there and the finances are there. Because if you can see, you know, a couple of the mayoral authorities have been a bit slow over the past couple of years around finances coming in, and unfortunately that's held up regional progress in a number of areas. And I think that's the only main thing that will stop a number of talented people from putting themselves forward to be those regional mayors.
So what needs to happen to make sure that devolution does happen, that those budgets are within the power of those mayors and the local authorities? You know, we've been in a situation where local authorities have had budgets cuts by huge amounts, but then, and James, I'm sure you can contest to this, that the local authorities have been some of the biggest spenders when it comes to regeneration projects. So how do we make sure that investment gets to the right places?
Yeah, so I mean, everybody in this room will know just how much money local authorities have been spending over the past few years. I think, according to our data, it sits around £7.5 billion worth since 2013. So, you know, if you look at the trend of the graph, I mean, it's gone up and up and up. And even with the interest change on the PWLB, it hasn't really dissuaded them from going in. And I think that what's very important when we talk about local regeneration, and you know, especially at this moment with people going in or authorities going in buying up assets, is you know, many have their own reasons, and that's been, you know, hotly talked about. We've done it here, but that regeneration idea and process needs to be thought out well before those assets have been bought. And the key questions for those leaders in those communities are, do you really have a full picture of what you want to do post purchase? That would be my big you know, query to any local authority who are interested or already have been. And I've been and visited a few, and they've got clear ideas about, you know, creating corridors from public places and creating better town centres for the people that live there. And, you know, with the discussion we're having about mayors, people who really know their community and know what's going on, you know, from the ground up, I think that could be a really interesting, you know, collaboration going forward.
Mm. Nick?
Yes. I mean, exactly on that, what I found, and again, I speak as an ex-deputy leader of a Westminster council, and so knowing how hard it is on these things, this was in the years of Paddington Basin, showing my age, but often the hardest money to spend or get approved is those small amounts, that development money, you know, that couple of million that you're talking about, because often, you know, it might get completely wasted, because, you know, we all know the nature of development is sometimes it can lead nowhere. And anyone in their career, and I'm talking more about kind of civil servants rather than the mayors, but it can, you know, it can happen at any level, don't want to be then criticised because they burnt, you know, a couple of million. Whereas we all know in this industry, that's what you need to do to kind of, like, on the feasibility early stages of the project. So often, funnily enough, that's the hardest money to get spent. And again, if I can do a brief advert, that's where we see LCR coming in, because actually, you know, we're very happy to work with the local authorities on those early stages, kind of like doing the work to try and make it happen or see whether it's possible. Because, you know, the beauty is we can take a kind of portfolio type view, knowing that if you do 10 of these, you know, some will come off, some won't. Whereas for a local authority, when it's the only one they're doing, it's much harder, because, you know, because then it's seen as a you know, kind of like a wasting public money if it doesn't happen.
Mm. Yeah. Well, from my point of view, the initial quantum that's been suggested is about £30 to £50 million per region per annum. And the key thing in the first instance is for any funding strictures to be removed, basically to say, look, you're responsible for this money. It's up to you how best to spend it, depending upon the needs and aspirations of your local area. Which sounds obvious, but actually when you see the way that funding packages are empowered to match that funding with other funding sources, which is where we were talking about other private interventions, and then other public money that could potentially be used as well. So James, you mentioned about public ambitions, want to go beyond and try and work up solutions around the four UK grand challenges, then they should. I think the government, in all honesty, are fairly receptive to people asking for more money for their regions, providing they work towards those four challenges.
So the people should have big ambitions. They should definitely try to match or outmatch the funding that is pushed their way. How do they make what they want to do for local regions attractive then? If we want to get private investment in and we want to more than double the amount of investment that each town and city has, what are the key elements of creating that attractiveness?
In my view, I think a greater focus on productivity and research and development is absolutely essential. I think that when LEPs were first introduced, you had a focus, quite rightly at the time, on full employment. So it was about total numbers of jobs. Now they can be a bit more selective about what type of employment they want to bring forward to, in effect, turbocharge, for want of a better phrase, those local regions. So again, if I look at one of our developments, Advanced Manufacturing Park in Rotherham, we've got Rolls-Royce, Boeing, McLaren, and now the UK Atomic Energy Authority. Well, that wouldn't have come forward without public money, ultimately, and they decided to make that investment. And again, it's further investment in those types of facilities. But the other big thing, of course, and this is something that Nick is far better qualified than me to talk upon, is the type of places that they are going to support bringing forward. So if I look at, you know, the regeneration of town centres and what some of the held back areas, if you only use that phrase, need to do, then you're increasingly looking at design-led places, creating density around railway stations and about, you know, trying to encourage more people to get into town centres, but then the quality of public realm as well. So, you know, you're looking at a far more nuanced piece from the regions that maybe you've seen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely right. Again, you take kind of King's Cross, and there's some great public spaces around there, Stratford similarly. What we're trying to do now in Manchester, and again, next time any of you are going in by train to any city, you know, almost guaranteed you'll see some crappy land around it with old kind of sheds and warehouses, practically deserted. And it always needs the kind of public sector money first to kind of like show that long-term view, exactly as James was saying. And I think that's where the public works loans money is crucial for that. And then alongside that, I think if the private sector can see that and can see that long-term money coming in, and they often need to see the kind of like the first, you know, bricks go down, then they're happy to come in afterwards. So I see the role of the public sector very much is setting that vision, as you say, that you often need the mayor to do that, and putting in that early money, often, you know, showing an ambition of creating a place around it. Again, Manchester Mayfield that we're working on now, you know, we're going to have a public park in the middle of it because, you know, Manchester, again, is very short of parks. So it's a nice place to kind of live and work. And then once people kind of see that in the private sector, see that, it's much easier for them to come in beyond that, knowing that you really are creating a space there and a place that people will want to live and work.
Hmm. So a real commitment from government that they want to see that regeneration. And it might not take a huge amount of money, just a little example of we believe in this place and we believe in you.
Correct. And a long-term view, and you know, an ability to see through the cycle, because we, you know, we all know the cycles happen, but you know, if you're the local mayor, knowing that this is a generational building that you're doing or development.
Excellent. I want to take us back to productivity, which you mentioned, Ian. And James, I know you've done some work on this. You've been pulling together a research document for us looking at the UK in the 2020s. And productivity is not something we're that good at in the UK. Would that be fair to say?
Speak for yourself.
Touché.
Yeah. I mean, government statistics spell it out pretty much. You know, the decade before 2008, I think that our annual output was increasing in terms of output per hour by about 2.2%. And in the 10 years since the recession, that's, it's not flatlining, but it's only increasing by 0.5% per year. Now, there's been many, many reasons for this. I think one of them is obviously that we had the recession, the lack of funding that local authorities have had. I think it's been, you know, most of them have seen it cut about 50% in that period. The UK has changed as well. We've seen a lot of job changes and the kind of, you know, that move from a deindustrialized economy into perhaps a digitalized economy, now a green economy, you know, which we can expect to see over the next 10, 20, 30 years. Have we been upskilling our, you know, our employee base enough? And more to the point, I think, for this conversation is, are we providing, you know, the UK, the people in the UK, giving them the right apparatus to succeed and, I guess, bringing it back again before we get to globalized is, you know, how do we create master plans that work for town centres that actually need that injection of capital and people? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could talk about this for hours and hours, but, you know, how do you retain the right kind of people in your local areas? How do you give them jobs? You know, is it a, you know, chicken and egg? You know, do you build businesses first and do people follow? Or, you know, which way around really is that? Do we start or do we go?
Yeah.
Universities are absolutely central to solving the productivity challenge that we've got. The guy who I tend to read most of in terms of productivity is a guy called Professor Richard Jones. He used to be at the University of Sheffield, now moved on to the right side of the Pennines, Manchester. What I would say is that where I've seen universities work, so if I take the University of Sheffield's Advanced Manufacturing Research Centre, set up 20 years ago, it's now got 150 partners. That is involved with working with major original equipment manufacturers to either improve the quality of the product, reduce the time it takes to create the product, or reduce its cost. So therefore, there is a whole approach to what it is that they actually want to produce. And the end result within Rotherham has been 2,000 people now work for companies on one of our sites that are linked to companies working with that Advanced Manufacturing Research Centre in jobs at a far higher gross value added per head range than in the rest of the Sheffield City region. So therefore, in productivity terms, it's probably the most productive employment. The key thing with that, and coming to your point, which is what do you build first? The employment space has been built, and then we've been able to build a place around it. So therefore, the housing has then subsequently followed. We're following up with the community facilities as master developer of the 750-acre site that, you know, that particular site sits within. And really, I expect to see more examples and government support those examples across the UK. So we're working with Leeds now on the College of High Speed Rail and Systems Integration on one of our sites. Another University of Manchester involved, University of Birmingham. So again, I think their role is absolutely central.
Thanks, Nick.
Local affordable homes. You know, again, just think about it. You know, if you've got an hour and a half commute in, you know, you come in, you're kind of like a bit fed up, a bit knackered, whatever. You think you're facing that at the end of the day as well. You know, you're much more likely to be doing a 9-to-5, whereas if you've got, you know, a half an hour commute in, you know, even if you've been able to even better walk or cycling, you come in, you know, much better frame of mind, much more productive for the day, probably much more likely to work a longer day as well, because, you know, you haven't got a 3-hour round trip journey. So it all comes, you know, as both Ian and James are saying, it's a holistic thing, which again comes back to local mayors can kind of take that whole place-based, you know, nice work environment, good public realm, but crucially good affordable local homes as well.
And is this what successful towns look like now? If we start with the productivity question and build around that, that we can create places that work for our current situation and hopefully the future situation. James?
There's a nice stat which I came across whilst we were doing this this research, which might be a good kickstart for this question actually for everybody. If the regions in the UK that lag behind in terms of productivity and national GDP were to cut their deficit by 50%, GDP would grow by £84 billion or 4-5%. And that's according to PwC. So that gives you an idea of just, you know, how much growth there is to be had. And often people frame it in that, like, oh, you know, there's so many places that need our help. But actually, there's a lot of places out there that are, you know, that are really ready to kickstart. And I think that if we, you know, if we bring it back to why we're here, which is MIPIM, you know, what was the tagline for MIPIM this year?
The future is human.
The future is human, right? And that's where it all starts. You need to find out what the local needs of those of people are that live in X community or town centre or city. You know, we shouldn't forget about cities because a lot of them need investment as well. And then really go from there, I think. And I forgot what the question was. Sorry.
Typical James. Ian knows what the question was.
If you've written it down.
If you just focus it on great places where people want to live and work, then by definition, people will then become as you mentioned before. No, I'm just saying this. I don't point out just for the people at home. Then people will naturally want to work longer and harder. And I think that the reality is that it's not just a productivity measure. I think there's a happiness measure as well. It was one good thing, I think, in statistical terms that came out of the Cameron government, actually, which was starting to measure happiness for the first time. And I think if we come back to the principles, I think we're all in raging agreement on, which is, in effect, working around your existing infrastructure and then creating affordable but high-quality housing and places where people can live and move. And you know, one of the grand challenges is about addressing at the moment obesity and wellness, then clearly we're onto something. So I think I'm in worse shape than you, in all honesty, James. My running's well behind. So I think that that's what it needs to focus on. Nick, do you want to add anything in further?
Oh, that was put me on the spot there.
That was a nice segue.
Yes, exactly. No, I mean, I think unfortunately probably we're in violent agreement. So, but it is, you know, coming back to the kind of stark question in terms of devolution, what's the role it's got to play? It is, I think it does crucially come back to the mayors again, who can kind of take that holistic view, take that long-term time frame, candidly want to be known for legacy type projects. I think the whole devolution agenda is, you know, very important for this. And I guess the challenge would be, why can't we have it everywhere? And you know, really trying to make that mayoral model work in the smaller towns and cities as well.
Fantastic. So I guess just to wrap us up for the conversation, we are clear that devolution does lead, and those mayors have a really crucial role. I'd just like to know from each of you the one key thing that either central government or private sector could do to ensure that the correct investment does follow that. Ian.
Get involved. Not enough developers actively work with local enterprise partnerships constructively. And if they don't, then they have absolutely no right to criticise what eventually comes forward. So we've actively taken a role within Sheffield City Region. Nick, I know, is heavily involved in a number of regions as well. So therefore, people in the industry should be taking a leading role in engaging with the subject.
Fantastic. Thank you, Nick.
Stable long-term investment money that can be applied by the local mayor or local authority.
Thank you. And James, last but by no means least.
Okay, so austerity is supposed to be over, so we're told. Brexit is now underway, so there should be a pretty fresh looking budget coming our way. Maybe cynics might think otherwise. I really think that this, you know, I really didn't want to say this, but leveling up. We got so far, didn't we?
Yeah, there was almost a little bit of sick in your mouth. If we are
truly to level up and unleash Britain's potential, then we really need to think about giving our local leaders that opportunity to really go forward and, you know, and grow those their own communities, destinations, so on and so forth. So I think that, you know, a lot of it is, you know, if we are out of this austerity madness, then let's see something, I think.
I love it. And not just giving the local leaders opportunities and a voice, giving local people opportunities and a voice as well. I think we can only level up, I'll say it too, if we allow those areas to have a voice. You know, it's no good levelling up from central government because what do they know, I suppose. So I think three really good things to finish on there, which is get involved. Be in it for the long term. Don't think that this is a quick in and out. And, you know, have strong local leaders and have passion, and then we can create a UK that works really well, that is productive, that is a nice place to live, work and play, and where potentially we could all be happy, like we sat in Cannes in the sunshine with a nice glass of rosé.
I'd rather be here
every day of the week.
Every day of the week. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.